You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
We're thinking about the topic of work, rethinking work, trying to think from the ground up about why we work, what's good about work. It's interesting, isn't it? We just, if you study, you just move straight into work at some point or another. And suddenly you find yourself doing this thing, and what is it all about? So this is a chance to rethink work. What I'm going to do is explore a little bit why we work in modern society, and I think then some of the problems with that, and then I'm going to share the Bible's perspective, or a Christian perspective on work, which I actually think offers really deep reasons to work. Now, you don't have to agree with the Christian perspective on work, but I think it'll be really interesting just to ask this whole question of why do we work, and is there a different way or another way to think about work? And so then, this is why work. The next talk is good work. How do we rediscover the goodness of work? That's tomorrow. And then frustration will be the third day. How to love the frustrations at work. Now that sounds ambitious, even as I just say that. How do you love the frustrations at work? Well, why do we work? Well, it's captured in one slide right here. To all employees, new incentive plan, work or get fired. That's a good reason to work, right? It's about the money, isn't it? It's actually about the money. But I actually want to tell you that money is not the reason you work. Money is not the reason to work, because money, you can't eat money. The numbers in your bank account, you can't do anything with it. You can't eat them. They don't keep you alive. They don't clothe you. So we say we work for money, but we don't actually work for money, do we? We work to live. If you don't work, you don't eat, and you die. It's actually helpful to recognize that it's that direct. Money is the actual in-between intermediate thing. We actually work to live. And it's actually really helpful to recognize that. Why are you so stressed at work sometimes? Because your life is on the line. Your livelihood is on the line. Yeah, there's all sorts of safety nets, but there's actually a real immediacy about that. You're actually working to live. That's a reality. And not just now, but in the future. We see a horizon when we'll stop working at some point, but we still need food, we still need clothing, we still need shelter. So you've got a kind of a double viewpoint there of you're working to live now, but you're also working for life in the future. So that's one of the reasons we work. I actually want to say that work is a life and death matter. And so when you feel a bit of stress about work, that's actually kind of appropriate, right? But it's not just a life and death matter physically. It's actually work is a life and death matter emotionally. It's a life and death matter emotionally. I was in Darwin last year, and I read some of this in the Northern Territory News about a guy called Francesco Cristoforu. And he chased his victim around the Fanny Bay pizza restaurant in Darwin, trying to kill him with a knife. And he was heard saying, "Tonight I kill you." Why was he doing that? Well, actually, the person he was chasing was not a customer. It was another chef. And the lawyer said in his defense that Francesco is a passionate chef and he's very committed to his pizza. See, work is a life and death matter. Why? Actually, because our identity is caught up in work. Our sense of ourself, of who we are, what's important to us, our place in society, how people understand us, are caught up actually in our work. So we live in a meritocracy. Australia's a meritocracy. Our merit is not found so much in our families. It's not found in our suburbs so much. It's actually found in our place in society, in our work. Let me give you two quick examples. Who's more valuable, a street sweeper or a civil engineer? You kind of want to, you want to say, don't you? You actually want to say, neither.
The one that gets paid most.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Who is more valuable, the one who makes donuts or a doctor? Sorry? They're both are good. Yeah, they are both good. But I think in Australian society, I am what I do. I am what I do. That's another reason that work feels like it's life and death to us, because I am what I do. And if I suddenly no longer do this thing where I've invested so much meaning, it actually is an emotional kind of death to us. And actually, I think this is a little bit more where the money comes in, isn't it? Because money starts to become that emotional life and death, which Russell yelled out for us. The more money I'm paid, I must be what? More valuable. The more money I'm paid, I'm more valuable. I'm more important. My identity is greater. My sense of worth is greater because we're a meritocracy. How do we measure it? Well, the status that I have in my job. But even if the status I have in isn't great, if my pay is fantastic, then you know I might cope with perhaps being a real estate agent. But my pay is fantastic, and so suddenly I have value. It's interesting, isn't it? Work is actually a matter of life and death. That's why we work. Now I actually want to talk about some of the problems with that. See, one of the reasons we work is for provision. That's actually behind the life and death. And I actually want to say that's good. There's not a problem with that. Working for provision, working for food, working for clothing, working for a shelter over your head, keep the rain or the sun off. That's actually a good reason to work. So there's not a problem there. But it's the money thing. See, if the goodness of work is related to the money, what happens if the money goes down? That actually suddenly means, doesn't it, intrinsically, that the goodness of the work must go down. And so what does that lead to? Well, it actually leads to, or if in your money stays the same, but somebody else in society, their money goes up, and they seem more valuable when your work you think is just as valuable, how do you start to feel about your work? Grumpy, disappointed, uncaring. Forgive me if you know any nurses, but I imagine lots of people went into nursing because they kind of have a caring disposition. But have you ever met those nurses who, like, I don't know, you know, it's like you're a piece of equipment. You know, you're really in the way. And what are they upset about? They're poor pay. And so they no longer value their work and they no longer value you. But money even has a bigger problem, doesn't it? So just think about what's going on in the financial services at the moment. People who work in the financial services are supposed to offer their clients good services and wise advice. But because people in the financial services, not everyone, but have tied their value to what their money, how much money they earn, what kind of advice do they offer to their clients if you read the newspaper?
Good advice for them.
Yeah, good advice for them to make as much money. So you can actually see that when we start to attach, I work for money, which I think our society does and our culture does, if we stay there, it actually is quite a damaging cycle for us if we can't kind of recognize that. So that's one of the problems. But what about working for identity? What happens when we work for our identity, when our sense of self is wrapped up in our work? Well, what does that mean? Well, it's good if work is going well. It's actually quite good. We can get a good sense of identity. My place in the world is assured. I'm valuable. But what happens when work goes wobbly? The project goes pear-shaped. You get retrenched. Or something that you've wrapped yourself up, self-esteem up in goes a bit wobbly. What happens at work? It's devastating. Because it's not just work. It's your sense of self, of who you are. So you'll do anything for work then, won't you, if your identity is wrapped up in work? You'll do anything. You'll do anything that your manager asks you to do in hours, in effort, maybe in ethics. Why? Because your identity is what matters to you. And so you'll do anything to keep your identity. And you might cross all sorts of lines. You might sacrifice your family and sacrifice relationships. But it's not kind of just do anything for work. Have you ever had that experience where something's gone wrong at work and your boss has just blown up completely out of proportion to whatever happened? Ever a few smiles? Yeah, that's happened, right? Why is that? Because for your boss, or maybe it's for you as a boss, your identity is wrapped up. And so when that thing didn't go well, it's you who didn't go well. And so you explode. I confess this as a parent. I've got 4 children. Parents do the same thing. They find their identity in their kids. If their kids don't do well at school or don't behave rightly, the parent blows up out of all proportion. Why? Because they've put their identity kind of somewhere else. What does it mean? What kind of problems happen when we put our identity in our work? Well, just Google student commits suicide because of failing exam. I Googled it yesterday. 1.1 million hits. And on the first two or three pages, just article after article all over the world. So just one off the first page of Google links, a 17-year-old student failed a physics paper, committed suicide because he failed the physics paper. That's what he said. His dad thought he was doing well in physics, sent the paper back to be re-evaluated. It got redone 4 months down the track. Turned out he actually topped the class. But you can actually see the heart problem there. His identity was in passing that exam. His success as a physics student. So that's the second problem. If we put our identity or status into work, it will actually crush us. The third one is if we think that work actually protects us from death, that actually success and security can be found from work, that will also crush us. I'll give you a couple of examples. If you're a CEO, will that stop you from getting cancer? No, it won't. Just delegate the cancer. You, underling, minion, go off and be sick on my behalf. Yeah, it doesn't work. But we think if I just progress enough in life, I will be secure. So, I mean, and that comes back to the money thing. So you think, oh, okay, why am I so stressed about money? It's actually because of security. So, and where do we find security? Well, we find it in houses in Australia. So in Australia, the average house size in 1984 has gone from 162 metres per square metres to, in 2003, 227 per square metres, a 40% increase. And at the same time, the number of average Australian families, well, now the number of houses has 6 bedrooms. At the same time, the number of Australians in a family is 4. Why? Because if I have a bigger house, I'm more secure. So what does that mean for work? I owe. So off to work I go. So all these things, when we attach kind of security, identity, or money as the drivers for work, actually leads to really big problems. And the reason they're big problems is we don't see them. They're just part of the air we breathe. So what does Christianity say about reasons to work? It actually has a very different view of work. I'm going to read out a little bit from the start of the Bible, Genesis. This is the end of the first chapter. Behold, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished all the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This passage actually says something incredible. I'm going to draw out 3 points out of it. Actually, 4, I think. The first one is that work is fundamental to human existence. These are the first 3 occurrences of the word work in the Bible. And you notice that God works. The whole chapter 1 of Genesis, let there be light, and there was light. Let the waters part, and there be land, and that was so. Let there be animals, and it was so. It was actually God working. God actually expending effort. That's what Google says when you type in Google, what is work? It says expending effort to achieve a result. And the Bible says that God worked. That's actually an incredible idea. Because the Christian understanding is that God is ultimate. He creates ultimate meaning in the universe. So if God is the center of meaning in the universe and he works, then work actually is fundamental. It actually is at the center of what it means to exist. It's a fundamental aspect of reality. If I can put it, I know that sounds really philosophical, but it's kind of getting at work is not something we've imposed on society. Work is not something that's crept in out of evil and darkness. It's actually fundamental to the way the universe has been made. And the word here for work is actually the ordinary everyday for human work. It's God does work, the same work that humanity did. So have you ever wondered why long-term unemployment is so devastating? This is it. It's not just about the social relationships. It's not just from the sense of worth, of contributing and achieving something. it actually, that work is fundamental to human existence. And so when you don't work, you're not living out what you are meant to be. And that's actually deeply destructive. Now, it's not quite the same. You might be looking for work and unable to work. And that's a difficult and terrible situation. But it's just, I'm not criticizing that. I'm just making the point that, work is actually at the center of us, which is why we struggle so much when we're not working. A French philosopher called Albert Camus said, "Without work, all life goes rotten." That is true. Without work, all life goes rotten. Now, just carefully, we should be careful here. One of the mistakes we make in the Western world is to define work by pay. I'm only working if I get paid. Oh, a terrible mistake, because suddenly we've devalued all those mums who look after children, because they're not paid. And we're saying they're not valuable because we've tied value to money. We lead to all sorts of destructive problems in our society when we actually say work equals pay and work equals the amount of pay. So work is fundamental to our existence. Work in and of itself is good. That's the other big idea that comes out of this. Throughout the Bible is relentless in saying that God is good. Not a goody two-shoes, but deeply, profoundly good. And God works. So if God is good and he works, he gives himself to work, then work in and of itself must be good. Now, if you live in the Western world, we've grown up kind of actually thinking work is good. But actually, this is a unique idea in the history of the world. And we just stand in the heritage of Christianity and the heritage of Judaism to have this idea. Let me quote a guy you would never have heard of before, because I hadn't. His name is Hesiod. He was an ancient Greek poet who was apparently pretty popular. And he writes this about work. He talks about the golden age of humanity. "They," humanity, "lived like gods, without sorrow of heart, remote and free from toil and grief, remote and free from work." What was the golden age? When you didn't work, when you were like the gods, when there was no toil. And actually, it wasn't just the ancient Greeks. The Sumerians thought that with their creation myths. The gods created human beings in order to feed them so that they didn't have to work. So this is actually a really radical idea, that work in and of itself is good. Now there's one more kind of idea that comes out of this. Not only is work in and of itself good, but work achieves what is good. Notice that top line there, it says, "Behold, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good." The way that's kind of written, with that "behold," and it's summing up all of this creation act that you get in the first bit of Genesis, "it was very good," it's kind of like the writer saying, look, get your camera out, take a picture of this. This is incredible. God looks over all the creation, and it is very good. And God did it by working. And throughout the rest of the Bible, this idea is picked up, that work is actually for good. Your work is for good. It is to actually change the world for good. That's fundamentally what work is actually about. It's about shaping the planet, helping, it's making life flourish. It's for good, to achieve good. Now you might be thinking, how is it good? How does work achieve good? Why do we have so much trouble working out that my work feels like it's good? I think the reason is because we've wrapped our identity up in work. We think work is all about my identity. And it's about whether I feel valued in my work, or whether I'm being valued in my work, or whether my work is achieving what I want. And so we look at work through that grid. And if it's not giving me my sense of identity, if it's not achieving for me the pay that I would like, then work is what? No longer good. But can you see how the grid that we look at work with actually shapes whether or not we think it's good? So if we step back and say, and this is what the second talk will be really exploring, rediscovering the goodness of work, is that the Bible actually sees that work is done for yourself, providing for yourself, but it's actually done for others. That's a deep idea in the Bible, that work is not done so much for yourself as for others. And I want to say that actually one of the ways to appreciate work is to step back and ask yourself the question, how is it that my work contributes to the people around me? How is it that my work contributes to the community? How is it that my work contributes to other people's work? How does it lay a foundation for their work? And I think, you might initially think, no, there is no hope. But I think if you step back and think hard enough, you'll actually start to see that your work creates good in all sorts of ways. Now, not all work does that. There's certain jobs that are actually destructive and use people and destroy people. And that's not what we're talking about here. Did you whisper engineering? No, I was just kidding. Assassins, yeah, that's not necessarily good work, is it? So we haven't really got into that. But I want you to think about, I've got four implications for thinking about this. There's the biblical idea of work, and then one kind of challenge at the end. The first one we just talked about, if work is good, that actually ought to change our mindset about being at work. When you walk into the office or onto the site, you actually ought to think, it's good that I'm here. Being here is a good thing. Not just because of the outcomes, not just because of the money, but if work is good, then you working is good. Hopefully that will start to change that whole sense at work. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if work is good and is for good, then it actually means you can start to do work that's good for you. See, if we choose work because of identity, maybe we might choose the work that actually we're not suited to, we're not gifted for, that doesn't suit us. But we choose it because of the identity it gives us, the status it gives us, the pay it gives us. But actually then, the work is not good for us. We're not the right person for that job. But if all work is good, that actually frees you up. You know, you really like painting houses. Go for it. Does it matter that other people look down on people who paint houses? It doesn't. If you like it and you're gifted at it, go for it. So that actually should be immensely liberating. Yes, you still need to provide. You need to kind of find a work that, you know, helps you provide and care for your family and care for you. But actually should step us out of the shackles of our society and be able to be much freer about the work we choose. I think the other thing is, if work is to bring good, we touched on this, can you look for the good in your work? How could you do your work to bring good? And take your eye off just your achievements, but actually even in your what you're trying to achieve, what is the best outcome here that will bring the most good, both short-term and long-term? Timothy Keller, he's a speaker and a writer, he says, we actually need to introduce the idea of multiple bottom lines. We measure so much of the outcomes of what we do against profit. But if our work is for good, then we actually need to bring in multiple bottom lines. How is what I'm doing contributing to the people around me, even as we do it? How is it contributing to society? How am I seeking their good? Now, I know that sounds unrealistic, but actually, isn't that what lots of our workplace legislation is about? Or isn't that what lots of our environmental rules are about when it comes to things like mining and engineering? They're actually saying you can't do your work in a way that ruins it for the community. It's funny enough, we've stumbled upon this as the world. But if we had this idea that my work was for good, we actually wouldn't need legislation to tell us what to do. We wouldn't need anti-bullying rules. We wouldn't probably need anti-corruption rules. We wouldn't need so many rules in the finance industry about giving your clients good advice, because you would be doing it for what? For good, for their good. See, this idea is that work is good, but it's actually not a place to find ultimate meaning. So we haven't really touched on that in Genesis, but what you actually see in the book of Genesis in the first couple of chapters is that ultimate meaning is found in relationship with God. So what we've done with our work is lots of us have rejected the idea that there is a God, a creator that we're made for, but we still search for ultimate meaning. We don't find it in the 21st century in our families. We don't often find it in our kind of a hierarchy of society, but we do find it in work. And we say, work is where I find my sense of identity and my sense of meaning and my sense of purpose. And actually, we're supposed to find it in God. And that's how this passage ends. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. On the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating he'd done. The plot line of the whole Bible is that humanity might end up at rest in relationship with God, actually enjoying him, resting in him. And that's actually where we find ultimate meaning.